Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Fiction. Science fiction. Horror. Fantasy. Crime. LGBT. Thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCB. 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 1050 AM Palm Springs.
Welcome back into the House of Mystery, and of course I'm Al Warren hosting the show, and my co-host over on the other side of the country, Mr. David Martino.
Hey Al, how you doing?
I'm delicious.
You are.
I'm tasty today. Real tasty. Wet and syrupy. Another beautiful day. So now what we've got a classic. We've got a man that's written, or he's got a book out, and it's going to be covering his complete Leonard and Larry collection. So this is a strip, a gay comic strip from a few years back. And it's kind of a collection, all put in a book. So let's welcome him here. It's Mr. Tim Barella. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
As a comic strip person, when did you start writing and doing comic strips? Like, where did that come from for you?
Oh, God, I talk about it in the introduction. It's something that I always wanted to do. I always wanted to draw cartoons and write stories and whatnot. And it was a long process of trying to get my foot in the door somewhere in the business after high school and, you know, in the 1970s. And eventually I kept coming up with these two characters, Leonard and Larry, and they just seemed to click. There was just something about them. I thought, well, maybe I could develop a comic strip around these two guys. They were sort of the gay neighbors, kind of a radical notion for the funny pages in the newspaper, because that's what I was aiming for. I was always submitting stuff to the newspaper syndicates back in those days and getting lots of rejections. And these characters kept showing up in my ensemble of, you know, the neighbors who lived next door. And I thought, well, I could develop a strip around them. And then the opportunity came to submit some sample cartoons to a little publication called Gay Comics up in San Francisco, and that's where it all started. That was in the early 80s.
How was the mainstream, or let's say the commercial world, with dealing with your strips? you know, Leonard and Larry and things like that, a gay comic strip, and giving a voice to LGBTQ people. Like, what was that like in society in general?
Well, I remember one time, because I you know, it my comic strips and my cartoon characters and stories were aimed at a particular audience in particular publications. But as far as the greater populace out there, they really didn't see my stuff. But I can relate a story about the time that at the big Comic-Con down in San Diego, I was involved with that for years. I was moderating a panel, and suddenly I had Lynn Johnston, who does, for better or for worse, in the newspaper. She was sitting next to me, and you know, it was an interesting experience because there were all these other cartoonists, and they were jealous of me because they talked about having these little tiny strips in the newspapers that people could barely read, and I had a full page in a tabloid size magazine. And so I was talking about, you know, my cartoons, and it was interesting in that Lynn Johnston plans her stories way ahead of time. And she was, she started talking because I was talking about gay issues. She started talking about how she was planning to have her, the next door neighbor's kid in her comic strip come out of the closet. And this was something that she was planning ahead of time. And this was the first time anybody had ever heard of any of this. She just blurted it out, as far as I know. Her editor from her syndicate was sitting right in the front row down below us. He was the same guy who was the editor for Doonesbury. And, you know, he probably didn't hear anything about it until then. So the interesting thing is, the reaction that she got when she finally pulled off this storyline. I mean, she got newspapers canceling her comic strip. She got hate mail. It was terrible back then. But thankfully now things are different. You know, people's attitudes have changed.
What did you sort of have in mind when you do a comic strip like this with gay characters? Like, kind of what was your general storyline about? Was it just about issues, or was it more comedy and less serious?
Well, what I wanted to do at the time, being that I wanted to get my foot in the door, I wanted to do something that nobody else was doing, to find a niche for myself that nobody else had filled. There were a lot of, as far as the different gay cartoons that were published in gay comics back then, there were a lot of issue cartoons. There was a lot of coming out stories. There was stuff like that. And my notion was, what if these two characters, they're already out of the closet. Their families already know about them. They're just living a normal life. And, you know, how does living a normal life, is it different for gay people? How do issues come up, and how do they deal with them, and so on and so forth. And, of course, I you know, approached it in sort of a sitcom-y way. I've always been accused of doing a very light sitcom sort of cartoon style that I do as far as my writing goes and all. But that's how I dealt with it. You know, it was just trying to find something that nobody else was doing. And nobody was doing a gay comic strip about families. Larry in the strip was married. He was in a heterosexual relationship previous to meeting Leonard, and he had two kids. And so the kids became main characters also. And then the kids had kids, and Larry became a grandfather. I don't think anybody who was drawing gay cartoons back then had one of their characters becoming a grandfather. So, you know, it was just a lot of fodder for my imagination and storytelling. And, you know, it was more interesting than just doing issues. The issues came up occasionally, but, you know, I dealt with them in my own way.
Now, it doesn't look like you met immediate success trying to sell Leonard and Larry. Was it a struggle to get the strip published?
No, not really. It was a struggle to get any kind of cartoon sold back then, you know, sending things to syndicates and whatnot. But I think that when I sent the samples of Leonard and Larry cartoons, which are the first little cartoons that appear in the collection, when I sent them off to Gay Comics, it was immediate acceptance, and you know, they wanted to publish them. But as far as other things, yeah, no, it was always a struggle trying to send things to newspaper syndicates. I met somebody who worked later, at the Comic-Con. I met somebody who had worked at the Los Angeles Times Syndicate. And he told me that he used to see my stuff coming in, and he said, you know, I always liked your stuff. You know, nobody else did. So anyway, but I never had any luck with that anyway. Just as well, because I'd probably be, you know, the newspapers are unfortunately going the way of the dodo, and so are the funny pages. So I'd probably be doing something completely different today.
So when you were doing these, did you have kind of a thing that you wanted people to get out of the comic strips? Was there kind of a purpose to it?
I think the main purpose was just making people laugh and making them think. When I wanted to deal with an issue, there wasn't any particular agenda that I had going into it. I just started thinking about, you know, what would be an interesting, funny situation. And if there was something political that was going on that I wanted to talk about, I'd find a way to work it into the storyline. You know, like, I wish that I would have been doing the comic strip back when Proposition 8 was an issue here in California, or when Brokeback Mountain didn't win Best Picture for the Academy Award. I wish I could have talked about that, you know, because the strip was very L.A. based. It was about people who lived in L.A. Leonard's brother was a television producer and writer, and so I talked about show business and Hollywood a lot. I wish I would have had those opportunities, but unfortunately, the strip ended a few years before that controversy came up.
So your characters, your main characters, Leonard and Larry, where did they come from for you? Like, did you find them from people you kind of knew, or were they someone you've seen somewhere, or how do you assemble your characters like that?
They're just figments of my imagination. They really, you know, very few of my characters are actually based on actual people. They just pop into my head. you know, when I, when I'm thinking of, you know, stories that I'd like to tell, you know, I just create these characters and, well, wouldn't it be interesting to throw in this, this little quirk in their personality and whatnot, and, you know, an ethnic background or something like that. And I just sort of make them up out of whole cloth.
How long would it take you to write one of these strips in general?
The Leonard and Larry strips, once I started doing stuff for a magazine called The Advocate, and then after The Advocate, Leonard and Larry went to another magazine called Frontiers. They were both tabloid size publications, and I had a full page. And I had a deadline every 2 weeks for each of those magazines. Gay Comics prior to that was whenever I came up with something, I would just send it to them, they'd stick it in the next issue. But once I started working for the magazines, and prior to that, I had experience doing cartoons for motorcycle magazines in the 1970s. And so I knew what it was like to work under a deadline. And so for Leonard and Larry, I had a deadline every 2 weeks. Never missed a deadline in 12 years doing stuff for Frontiers magazine. Every 2 weeks, another strip.
When you look back on all this stuff, are you pretty happy with how it turned out?
Oh, I guess. I you know, it just turned out, you know, I just, you know, make it all up as it went along. And yeah, there are some storylines that I'm very happy about, because there were a lot of characters in Leonard and Larry, but not just Leonard and Larry, they were their kids, they were their friends, and friends, relatives, and different situations. I would come up with ideas for different situations and different characters, and sometimes for you know, a handful of strips, like 4, 5, 6 strips in a row, wouldn't have anything to do about Leonard and Larry at all. It would have to do with one of the other characters, or Larry's employee, or their friends, or something like that. And I delve into, you know, all the things in their lives, and it made it more interesting for me. You know, at least I wasn't wanting for ideas for jokes and storylines and whatnot.
Now, it seems like you've aged your characters throughout the strips, and that seems, oh, yeah, you know, very different from, you know, most cartoons. I was just wondering, you know, why you decided to age your characters.
To be different. I just never liked the idea of these cartoons that, you know, I saw as an adult, and I remember seeing as a little kid looking at the funny pages, and the characters never aged. They were always, Dennis the Menace was always a little kid.
Yep.
You know, it just, they never change. And the fact that my characters aged made the storylines more interesting. There were things that I could talk about Larry being paranoid about growing older, and he was about to turn 50 when the strip ended. But I used to like to deal with things like that about how time passed and how things changed in people's lives. It wasn't just a static situation with lots of gags. Mm. And I was very proud of the fact that I was one of only 3 comic strips in the country that had their characters, had their characters aging in real time. It was me. Wow. It was Lynn Johnston, who did For Better or For Worse, and Gasoline Alley. That was it. Just the three of us.
I would think it takes a lot of talent, you know, to be able to sit there and draw the characters and do the whole strip and come up with the theme and stuff. Where did you get the confidence for that? Where did you take any art classes, or is it just come natural?
I guess it just comes natural. It's just what I do. It's just, you know, I tell stories, and I tell stories with pictures. It's something that I always used to play around with. As a little kid, you know, and growing into adulthood, it's just something I always wanted to do, and something that I was good at, better than most of the other things that I can do. So it just came naturally, I guess.
Is there other comic strip writers or producers that you sort of looked up to, or that were your favorite?
Oh, I guess there were quite a few of them. I particularly remember a cartoonist named Dave Berg, I think his name was, in Mad Magazine. He did very sort of realistic, real human-looking characters that were cartoony at the same time. And I think that that's where I got the greatest influence as to how to design my characters to, you know, people have always pointed that out, that my cartoon.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Cartoon characters don't look like cartoon characters. They look like real people, but in a cartoony way. And I think that Dave Berg had a great influence on me. I used to love to read his stuff in Mad Magazine whenever I pick it up as a kid. Other cartoonists, Gary Trudeau, whose name I couldn't pronounce earlier, Gary Trudeau and Doonesbury were a great influence as far as, topics and dealing with, well, anyway, I just like his stuff. And let's see. It's been such a long time since I've really followed any of the newspaper comic strips. Calvin and Hobbes. God, that man's a genius. Absolute genius. And his artwork is superb. And, you know, when you look at it and you look at the line work and you think, he does this with a brush. the man draws with a brush. He doesn't use a pen. It's just amazing stuff. Let's see, who else was a big influence on me? I'm trying to remember, there was a cartoonist in Playboy magazine, who did these really weird, creepy, what was his name? Oh, now I brought him up and I can't remember his name. but he did these quirky things, you know, sort of these macabre little cartoons, and they were just so wonderful. And, you know, once I start thinking about it, I can probably think of tons of different cartoonists like Edward Gorey or what's his name who did The Far Side? I'm not good.
Oh, I was just going to say him with The Far Side.
Yeah, I'm not good with names. If you can remember his name, I'd appreciate it. I am not good with names.
What do you think of the business now? You know, so many newspapers are kind of going under, or they go online and all that. Do you think that the comic strip business is going to kind of fade away, or do you think it's still going to be strong for you?
I think that people will still do stuff online. That's something that I never wanted to do. That's why when the strip was canceled back in 2002, why it's taken 20 years for it to sort of come back in a compilation. I just never wanted to do anything online. I didn't want to run my own website or anything like that. But a lot of people out there do, and there are a lot of online cartoons, good, bad, and indifferent. And some of them are exceptionally good. And that's what people do now, and how they can manage to run these websites and self-publish collections. Just dealing with my publisher at Rattling Good Yarns Press over this past summer and trying to put this book together, how do people do it? You know, it was just insanity trying to put this book together. And it's completely different now. Everything's print on demand, and of course my publisher can contact me through emails and texts, and you know, it was pretty, for the most part, in the old days when we put books together, it was kind of hands off. I had a book designer in Illinois, and my publisher at Dreamhaven Books at Collier Press. My old publisher, he's in Minneapolis, still in Minneapolis. And you know, I dealt with them. I give them phone calls and they'd call me, and it was pretty hands off. They just, you know, put things together. But now, you know, oh my God, my publisher now, for putting this compilation together, he was calling me every day for a couple of weeks. I mean, oh, there's Ian again. what does he want now? You know, but Ian did a good job. The book turned out really, really nice, and I'm very happy. I'm very happy with it.
Do you think underground comics paved the way for changes in mainstream comics, movies, and TV today?
Probably. It had a lot to do with it. Certainly gay comics, where Leonard and Larry was first published, that was sort of an underground comic book. And I think that the underground stuff had a lot of influence, yeah.
So you never thought you'd go further and write a book or anything like that?
It's sitting in front of me. I'm sitting at my workspace. Oh, Ian knows about it. Ian knows that I'm working on this. It's based on some other cartoon characters of mine. It's all part of my cartoon universe. In fact, some of the characters from Leonard and Larry show up here. And, you know, it's almost finished. I'm working on the last chapter. And it's the next book project. And we may be doing this all over again for a year from now. I don't know.
There you go.
I don't know.
So what is your relationship with your characters? I ask that because so many of the fiction writers I talk with seem to have a unique relationship with their own characters.
I don't know, but kind of how I could answer
that. You see, some people say that, you know, like fiction writers will say, well, they're kind of like my family, or they're kind of like my kids, or they're like, they have descriptions like that, which as a nonfiction writer, I'm never quite sure how that goes. So I'm just wondering if it's that way for a comic strip person as well, or something. Or no.
I don't know. I'm thinking of an interview that Terry Gross did with a major film star, and I'm bad with names. I am not remembering names today. Major film star who lived in Texas. He has his own cattle ranch, and Terry Gross was going, so what is your relationship to your cattle? And this guy was going, what? You know, you're going to ask me what kind of relationship I have with my cattle? You know, I raise them, I sell them, people eat them, you know, or whatever. But Leonard and Larry, they're sort of part of my life, I guess, in a way. They're sort of extensions of my personality. I don't really think of them as my children or anything like that. What's interesting is how my readers think of them. It's really remarkable how when I used to get fan mail, but not so much anymore. Maybe I'll start getting it again. But when I used to talk to readers and read their letters and stuff like that, they actually started thinking of Leonard and Larry as almost like real people. Sort of that thing that they talk about in the movies or stage production, you know, a suspension of disbelief that this is no longer just pen and ink on paper, that somehow these are real people living real lives, and your readers get to care about them and care about what happens to them and care about what I do to them in my stories. And that's probably the coolest thing of all, not what kind of relationship I have, but what kind of relationship that my readers have with my characters.
Well, did that ever, have you ever done something with one of the characters that maybe upset a reader or followers?
Oh, yes. Yes. There was a time. I had this, Larry's, employee at his leather shop, a guy named, Jim. Jim fell in love with somebody named Merle, who was from Texas, and he was sort of a B-movie actor. And he, with help from Leonard's brother, the producer and writer, who got Merle a job on his sitcom, Merle became a sudden success. And so there was all these issues of Hollywood that Merle would have to deal with. And one of them was that he had a personal assistant. And this personal assistant had a thing for Jim. Jim had suspected that this woman was trying to, as he put it, get into Merle's pants, but that's my territory. And what he finds out is that she's really after him, because Merle had been in heterosexual relationships previously, and he wouldn't have been a conquest. Jim would be a conquest because Jim had never been in a heterosexual relationship. He was a virgin, and it was a challenge for her. Her name was Vicky, the personal assistant. And Jim, when he was confronted with this, said, okay, I'm willing to try something. You know, I'm willing to, you know, try something that I've never tried before. You know, sure, how about next Friday? And readers got really upset. You know, Jim would never do that. You know, why do you, you know? And, of course, you have to read the book. I am not going to spoil it. It is one of the funniest things that I've ever written. What Jim ended up setting a trap for Vicky and what happened to Vicky in the strip after that. And then readers were writing in going, oh, meow, that was nasty. Oh, that was good. You know, so, yeah, but it upset them, but they had to wait until the next strip to find out where I was going with it and find out, you know, no, Jim was not going to cheat on Merle. Jim was not going to, you know, go to the dark side. You know, everything's fine, you know, and my cartoon world continues.
Do you ever cover the topic of sexuality in the comic?
How so?
I guess in a way of how two men live together and kind of their ways sexually as well, or did you stay away from
that? I always thought that the best way to deal with humor is to leave the gag up to the reader's imagination. You talk about it, you set it up, and then you leave it to the reader's imagination, because it's much funnier in their imagination than if you would have shown the pratfall. And as far as sex went, I talked about it around the edges, but the readers filled in the rest in their imaginations, and it was sexier and more exciting to them because I didn't show anything. They just imagined it. And I would hear from readers about all kinds of things that they imagined this character doing and that character getting into. And I never really talked about it. It was all in their heads. And I think it works better when you do it that way.
Yeah. Yeah, I do too. I think that's great. That's great. Now, are you set up and have a website and a place that you'd like people to come find you? Or are you on all the social media, or are you
I don't even have a computer. I am talking to you on my smartphone, and that's about as high tech as I get. You know, people can go, you know, I do not do social media. I do not have a website. Nothing like that, and I am happy that I don't. You know, just if you want to find anything about me and my book and my cartoons, you go to my publisher's website. Everything's there.
Right. Okay. We'll have that up on our website as well.
Very
so
good.
People can find you, and you know, at least you weren't talking to us on your dial. Right.
No.
I mean, you know,
I've had other iterations of technology since then. at least I had a flip phone before this, but no, I haven't had a landline in years, so.
Well, so you're not that far back.
No.
Come on.
No.
Wow. So how was everything for you during the pandemic? Everything gone all right, or is it kind of a struggle, or what do you think?
No, I've been retired for, quite some time. The pandemic sort of delayed this project, this, you know, complete Leonard and Larry collection compilations, whatever you'd like to call it, was delayed by the pandemic. It should have been out probably a year ago, but things finally came together, and this other thing that's sitting in front of me that I'm working on, that started during the pandemic, just as sort of twiddling my thumbs, can't get out of the house. Let me try to revisit other cartoon characters and see what comes up. And that's a strip that I did for Bear magazine back in the late 80s. I did one strip called Grizzly and Ted. The readers of Bear magazine remembered that years later. I was always hearing about how people wondered about those characters and wondered about, when I might do something. And I thought, you know, this was in the back of my head, and I started playing around with it. And I started doing that during the pandemic. Unfortunately, I have carpal tunnel syndrome and drawing was always an issue, you know, having pain and whatnot. But I thought that it, you know, I haven't had problems since Leonard and Larry was canceled. But you know, I started trying to draw Grizzly and Ted again, and gosh, the carpal tunnel came roaring back, and it was really bad. So I had to stop doing that. But the first 8 pages of those efforts of revisiting Grizzly and Ted are in the new book. And so people can see what I'm talking about if they look at the book, look in the introduction. First 8 pages of Grizzly and Ted are there.
I guess you couldn't really get someone else to do the drawing for you, could you?
Oh, the big cartoonists do that. Well, they usually do their own drawing, but they have somebody else ink it for them. And as far as the comic books go, it's really stratified. Somebody writes them, somebody pencils in the captions, somebody else inks just captions, somebody else draws the drawings, and somebody else entirely inks the drawings. I'm not like that. I always did everything, you know, and I don't think I'd trust somebody else to draw my cartoon characters for me anyway. I would have to be a really special relationship, a relationship that I don't have with any other artist, at least not right now.
Well, you know, maybe one day someone will hear you.
I don't know.
They'll call you. You never know.
We'll see.
You never know. Well, it's certainly been a pleasure. Now, we're talking about the book coming out called The Complete Leonard and Larry Collection. And the author, creator of these strips, of course, and behind the book, has been our guest, and that's Tim Varela. Thank you for coming on the show.
Well, thank you for having me.
Thanks, Tim.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
The mission has been completed.
The end!
By George, he's got it! It is the end!
I'll see you.
If you're lying to me, I'll be back.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.